It came from if you want to call it a reputable organization, it has come out with news that has been false. China, in which two diplomats, one of them not directly involved in the talks, said it also is demanding written guarantees that its companies doing business in Iran would not be affected by U.S. sanctions. Next thing you know, you're going to have Germany saying the same thing, maybe, and then the EU coming out wanting guarantees from. I mean, this, you know, this whole thing with guarantees then is out in the open. But let's just stick with what China has said. So now you have China, now you have Russia. Both know that the U.S. has pulled out of the deal before. So how can it get guarantees from the U.S. where it can trust it?
Well, just to pick up on the point of the other panelists, I completely agree. I think that the U.S. cannot be trusted. But this is where coming back to the idea that this is a window of opportunity, and it's a very short window. But I also think, and perhaps call me overly optimistic here, but even China's remark, which does come across as sort of throwing a spanner in the wheel, is actually very positive, because this means that these countries and their intelligence services and their economists and all their analysts have actually been observing the situation and can see that the Western nations are now in a position of weakness. I think they went too far in their sanctions regime against Russia. And they realize that now, especially at this time of year, and especially in the terms of the sectors that it's impacting, it's going to be just as biting to Russia, if not to Western economies. And therefore, all these other countries are now making the most of it and actually imposing their diktat on a Western position that is far, far weaker as a result of the speed that it took in making these hasty decisions to go against Russia, precisely because, of course, it had no intention of going in militarily, given that in the last 50 years, we've only seen Western nations go up against much, much weaker countries and never, ever actually confront very powerful nuclear nations.
Very well. Thank you indeed. Thank you so much for that. Hafsakar Mustafa from London, journalist and political analyst, and Elijah Magnier, thank you for your contribution, veteran journalist and writer from Brussels. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight from Mikhail Tahway. It's goodbye until next time.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EM.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
With the presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio This is your host Musa Al-Bahadili and you are now listening to the program Viewpoints Joining us in the studio today is a dear friend Sheikh Muhammad Khani from the Islamic Seminary of Qum and Dr. Ali Alawiyan I welcome you both to this program and I hope that we will have a fruitful discussion today بإذن الله تعالى
Thank you very much.
Our topic today, dear friends, is about drugs, more specifically drug addiction. So I want to start out by asking the dear Sheikh Muhammad Khani about this problem of drug addiction. Do they need help or should we punish them?
See, it's quite a deep question and sometimes it's very difficult to give a general answer, general ruling to such a complicated or complex question, but just to make it clear, prevention is always better than cure. So first and foremost, if you want to talk about how to deal with drug addicts, addiction, we need to talk about how to prevent people from becoming drug addicts first and foremost. Talk about how we can prevent people from becoming drug addicts or become addicted to drugs. Because we have to look at the different reasons why people, they fall into drug addiction before talking about how to deal with them afterwards.
Right.
Or else we're just going to talk about how to solve some of the symptoms of the main issue or the root of the issue, which is why people that actually become drug addicts in the first place.
Right.
So we need to solve that issue. And then afterwards, we can talk about whether they actually need help or they need to be punished. Because we have to define what is punishment in this situation. Are we talking about imprisonment? Or are we talking about help in just acknowledging that they are drug addicts? We have to define the two words. In other words, we have to define help and punishment before we can talk about these two concepts being useful or not. So,
right. Then, Sheikh, let me ask you this question then. In Islam, how is drug addiction or just drugs generally viewed upon?
Of course, we know that the general ruling when it comes to drugs or any intoxicating drugs, it could be like alcohol, it could be anything else. They have the same ruling. It's haram. It's impermissible to consume it. Therefore, we're not allowed to consume it. So that's the general ruling. But if a person, he has an addiction, it's not always enough just to tell him that it's haram. Like, we need to help them before actually talking about punishments in form of imprisonment. Because normally when we talk about punishments, we normally talk about imprisonment.
Right.
We're talking about sending them to prison and so on and so forth. And that doesn't really solve the issue because of the studies that we actually have shows that people, they are consuming drugs even in prisons, right?
Right.
So you're taking a person who is addicted to something, putting him with people that have exactly the same issue as this guy. So you're not solving the issue from the root. Therefore, you're actually making it worse sometimes in certain situations or certain cases, right?
Right, yeah.
So
help, in Islam, yes, if I might interrupt you, what is the punishment for using drugs or selling drugs perhaps? Is it also imprisonment?
Yeah, we have to separate the two. It's two different discussions. Selling drugs is something, consuming drugs is something else. If a person is addicted to it, he's hurting himself and his family and his close people, like people that are close to him. So this person, we need to help him if he actually wants to get rid of that addiction, but it needs to come from himself, right?
Right.
Because habits and addictions, you can't solve it by controlling other individuals. It needs to come from themselves.
Would you say then, dear Sheikh, that punishment is not an effective remedy or cure for a drug addiction?
I would say punishment is necessary when it comes to people selling drugs.
Only when selling drugs.
Important and exporting drugs and ruining people's lives. In other words, making money on selling drugs. So I would say that you need... That's punishment. Like you need punishment for dealing with that. Yeah.
What about you, Dr. Alawiyan? When is punishment suitable? Only when selling drugs and also when you are addicted to drugs?
Yeah, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam Muhammad and his purified progeny. The respected Sheikh gave a pretty good answer to the question that an addict is looked at as a sick person, so he has to be looked at with care and attention to see what kind of attention is needed to be given to him or her. But to actually issue a general verdict to see is punishment better or, let's say, encouragement or even taking care of them better, I think it differs case by case. As we have seen previously in our country here, we were imprisoning the people who were addicts. Now, I mean, the strategy changed, and now they are not being sent to the jails anymore, but they are looked after in some centers to leave this habit.
Right.
But for those, as Sheikh said properly, for those who are actually providing the drugs for the people, they need to be punished because they knowingly actually are providing some poisons for the lives of the people. Not only a person who is addicted to the drug is the only victim, but also the family and the whole society around right. him is or her is are the ones who are actually affected by the drug itself. So those who knowingly are actually selling or providing or importing and exporting these things need to be punished.
How should they be punished, if I might interrupt?
Look, punishment also, again, differs on the level of the knowledge of the person who had, which is actually is the duty of a judge to distinguish which one is needed to have. For example, a person who transfers, for example, 1,000 kilo of, for example,
cocaine.
Knowingly. So, as the rulings and the, let's say laws here in this country says, he has to be actually punished for the to be
executed.
It's life sentence now.
Yeah.
I think they removed the execution.
No execution now. Only imprisonment?
I think
1,000, I think.
Yeah, exactly. I think they actually removed capital punishment for people importing drugs, if I'm not mistaken.
As far as I know, it was for 1,000 kilo or 1 ton. It was execution.
Oh, okay. So,
but it has changed, for example, for lower amounts.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
For a lighter
also
amounts.
Also for drivers as well. That's what I think.
Like, yeah.
People that are importing, but doing it because of,
necessity.
Poverty and they're poor, you know, they need to make money. They're forced into these things. Normally they're excused, but people that, no, they make a lot of money and they're the people that we consider to be...
Like Pablo Escobar in the West.
Exactly, right? The people that are behind the very scenes, true. Right? They're working behind the scenes. They normally get the capital punishment, if I'm not mistaken.
I need to check exactly for the... Because I think they have defined some, amounts for, for example, 5 kilo, 10 kilos, or let's say when it goes to 1,000 kilo. So the punishment differs. But for those, that is, I mean, the core of our discussion, which is about those who are addicted and have got this bad habit of being addicts. So for them, I think punishment is not a good solution. And as it has been understood well and it is being practiced, I think it is the way that is being practiced these days, that they need to be cared, to be cured.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dear Sheikh, do we have any treatments mentioned in Islam, how we can treat such a problem?
Yeah, that's a good question. Like, I know there's a association right now that are dealing with these issues and finding solutions that they can actually implement in the different rehab centers around Iran. But if we have to look at what is drug addiction is basically a habit. It's an addiction, right? So it's something that you're used to because of the pleasure that are behind it. So normally when they discuss this in ethics, when it comes to habits, how to deal with habits, especially if it's a bad habit, normally they say that you have to replace that habit, especially if it's accompanied by some sort of a pleasure.
Right.
Because a person is normally not ready to sacrifice the pleasure if not it's replaced with something, right?
True. Yeah.
So if a person understands or he felt or experienced the pleasure of being a healthy person, normally he's not willing to sacrifice this pleasure for a pleasure that is lower than that. For example, eating unhealthy, there's some pleasure related to that as well.
Yeah.
But if you're a healthy person and you experience what it means to be healthy, you're normally not willing to eat unhealthy and experience that pleasure because you're going to sacrifice another and greater pleasure because of that.
So we should introduce something that is, I don't want to say as addictive, but as pleasurable as drugs.
We should find a solution and find give him the tools to actually strengthen his own willpower. That's first and foremost, yeah? Because they have to come from outside. You cannot control people's addictions. Right. You cannot be like, you shouldn't do it if he wants to do it. Sooner or later, if he's under control, if he's in a controlled environment, sooner or later he's going to do it. You can control it for a period, for example. That's why we say, like, when we have to raise our children, we do exactly the same thing. We give them the willpower enough, or strengthen their willpower enough, so they can take the right decisions when they grow older, instead of taking decisions for them, right? Because right. when they grow older and we're not there to control them anymore, they're not going to take the right decisions in life. So when it comes to drug addicts, it's quite similar. We have to strengthen their willpower first and foremost. Then second, we have to discuss how we can replace that habit, or give him the tools to replace that habit, because the addict himself has to do it. We can't replace habits for him. What we need to show him how to do it and give him the tools to do it, and then afterwards try to give him some alternatives. So one of the things they normally do, if I'm not mistaken, you probably know better than me about it, in these rehab centers, they have a tendency to replace the pleasure of, for example, working out or having a healthy, like, being healthy as an individual, and having a healthy diet next to working out, going to the gym. And that normally helps, not only from a psychological perspective, but also from a physical perspective, right? Because they get rid of the drugs and the habits, or the need for having this drug physically.
So, may I add something to the explanations of the respected sheikh? When you're asking the respected sheikh, I want you to correct me if I'm mistaken.
Yeah,
what is the Islamic viewpoint on this? When sheikh is answering, actually, he's inducing from Islamic principles, like that of, for example, لَا تُلْقُوا أَبَيْدِكُمْ لَا تَهْلُكَ. So this is a general ruling. And then sheikh dissects the exact case that you are talking about. So it doesn't mean that in Islam, specifically on the issue of addicts, has some rulings on this specific case. Right. Though we have some
general rulings,
traditions and the hadith, even from imams, that even names the banj, what is called bang in the hadith itself, the name of the banj is mentioned. So, but I want to clarify the issue for the listeners and for ourselves, to say that sheikh actually is inducing, the same way that you are asking him for a solution for, or a remedy for the people who are afflicted with that actual affliction. So again, sheikh is inducing from Islamic, different Islamic narrations and hadith and verdicts, and he comes and strengthening the willpower. So since it is, he knows that he understood the person earlier, he understood what the reason or the background of this illness is, that is a mental illness, something that has been affected due to some circumstances from the family side or from the friend side. So then sheikh is giving you a prescription that is the strengthening the willpower or changing the environment of the person to go towards another, let's say, environment to let him forget whatever he was in, and to propose to him some new pleasures that is more motivating from the previous pleasures.
So and healthy as well, and healthy as well, right? It should be pleasurements that are healthy for himself, his environment, his families, because they exist as well, right?
Right, and with that, we will unfortunately have to end today's discussion because we are out of time. Dear Sheikh, I thank you for your insightful knowledge.
Jazakallah
khairan. And I also thank the dear doctor for contributing to this discussion.
It was a great pleasure.
And I also thank the dear listeners for tuning in. Fi amanillah.
Anything in life but you. wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Months of intense negotiations in the Austrian capital Vienna to revive the 2015 Iran deal coming to an end. The dialogue faces a make-or-break moment in the coming days. A draft text of an agreement between Iran and the P4+1 group, namely Russia, China, Britain, France, and Germany, is almost complete. The diplomatic effort seems to be near a climax, but still the very few remaining gaps in the text are keeping the whole thing in limbo, and a final failure is still a possibility. There has been a flurry of diplomatic efforts in Vienna's Palais Coburg Hotel, the venue of the marathon negotiations. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Said Khatibzadeh said on Thursday that talks between Iran and the P4+1 are still ongoing, and no one can say that an agreement has been reached until all outstanding important issues are resolved. The Iranian foreign ministry spokesman said extra efforts are needed to resolve the remaining issues and that everyone is now focused on the final key steps. Meanwhile, Russia's chief negotiator in Vienna says the talks are unlikely to end in failure. Mikhail Ulyanov told reporters in Vienna on Thursday evening that the remaining issues are few but need to be addressed. Ulyanov's comments were echoed by Britain's chief negotiator in Vienna, Stephanie Alcock, who said the parties are very close to an agreement. The Iranian side insisted that the talks in the Austrian capital have to reach a good deal or there will be no deal at all. Negotiators in Vienna have been trying to find a way to remove American unilateral sanctions against Iran and allow the U.S. to return to the 2015 deal. The U.S. sanctions were imposed after the U.S. unilateral withdrawal from the JCPOA in 2018. U.S. President Joe Biden has acknowledged that his predecessor's pullout was wrong, but Biden's words have done little to solve America's credibility problem that is largely blamed on Donald Trump. Tehran now says the sanctions must be removed in a verifiable manner, and Washington must offer guarantees that it will not abandon the agreement again. The United States has been dragging its feet so far, but Tehran says it will not back down from its red lines.
Iran can't go through the same thing again. I mean, in 2018, the U.S. unilaterally, abrogated the JCPOA, slapped on punitive sanctions. Iran had had 3.5 years of intense economic suffering, and it doesn't want to see that happen again. It doesn't want to sign some treaty. Only to see, to see the same thing happen either in, either later this year or in 2024 when, if Donald Trump is reelected.
Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Ali Shamkhani, has warned that if the Vienna talks do not lead to a good deal, the current U.S. administration will feel defeated in the near future due to lack of timely use of diplomatic opportunities. As all eyes are on the venue of the talks in Vienna, Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Rafael Grossi, will visit Tehran on Saturday to hold talks with Iran's nuclear chief and other top officials. The IAEA says the two sides will discuss outstanding safeguards issues with a view to addressing them. Does Grossi's trip boost the chances of a deal in Vienna? It is hard to guess at this point. The negotiations have been very complex, and there is no guarantee that they will end in a deal. It now seems that the fate of the diplomatic effort largely depends on whether the West will finally choose to make necessary political decisions.
Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has blamed the American regime for the current Ukraine crisis. He demanded an end to the war in Ukraine, saying the Islamic Republic of Iran has always opposed war and destruction anywhere in the world. The U.S. disrupted the stability of the country by interfering in its affairs and organizing rallies and creating a color coup. We oppose the killing of people and the destruction of the infrastructure of nations. Leader called the U.S. a perfect example and manifestation of modern ignorance, saying it feeds off the crises it creates all around the world.
Washington are glorified mobsters. That's all. America does to all of its allies. You've got to remember, there's a very good saying, if you're an American enemy, they might bribe you and bring you into their team. If you're their ally, good luck to you, sir.
Ayatollah Khamenei is referring to years of U.S. meddling in Ukraine since it became an independent state in the 1990s. After the fall of the Soviet Union, the U.S. pledged not to expand NATO eastward, close to the borders with Russia. But the U.S. and its Western allies reneged their pledges and started to include more Eastern European countries into the Western military alliance. In 2014, the U.S. implemented a color revolution in Ukraine and overthrew its democratically elected government. U.S. also supported the inclusion of right-wing groups and elements within Ukraine's government. It's now widely believed that in trying to move Ukraine into their orbit, Washington and its European allies overextended themselves, and Russia's intervention, firstly in facilitating Crimea's reunification with Moscow in 2014, then with the official recognition of the independence and sovereignty of the People's Republics of Donetsk and Luhansk, and now with a wider military operation to demilitarize and denazify Ukraine, is the result. Elsewhere, in his remarks, Ayatollah Khamenei said there are lessons to be drawn with regard to the Ukraine crisis. He said Western powers cannot be trusted and their support for their puppet regimes is only, quote, a mirage. Iran's leader said both Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and former Afghan President Ashraf Ghani have acknowledged that the U.S. simply abandoned them amid their domestic crises. As the crisis unfolded in Ukraine, the country's president, Zelensky, being left alone by the West, the U.S. has refused to send in soldiers to the country to protect its people and has only pledged more money and weapons.
Well, the Ukrainian president was basically helped into power by American advisors and American campaign organizers. The Ukrainian president was told that he could go ahead and put down by force the Donbass ethnic Russians who revolted after the government in Ukraine banned their language and restricted their ethnic autonomy.
The same scenario happened in Afghanistan, when after 20 years of occupation, the U.S. disastrously pulled out of the country, leaving President Ghani and Afghan people alone in the face of Taliban fighters. The U.S. is facing backlash over its treatment of its Arab allies. Despite selling them weapons worth billions of dollars and pledging support, it has failed to provide them with sustainable security.
More desperate. They put you in a more serious situation than you were before, and the terms that they dictate to you are much, much more demanding than it would have been had you not taken the actions that they allowed you to take at the first. So Zelensky took actions against his own ethnic Russian citizens at the bidding of the United States, at their will.
It's now become apparent that the failure of successive U.S. presidents and their European allies since the end of the Soviet era has been to overestimate their own power and underestimate that of Russia, China, Iran, and other countries that are outside their sphere of influence.
Both Ukraine and Russia have suffered damage and casualties since Moscow's self-declared special military operation began on Thursday. Bombardment and shelling of Ukrainian cities continued on Monday. According to officials in Kiev, the Russian military struck Ukraine's second-largest city, Kharkiv, possibly killing dozens of civilians. But the Russian officials dismissed the reports of civilian deaths as not credible and part of a propaganda campaign launched by the West. The West has responded to the conflict by imposing several rounds of unprecedented sanctions on Russia, targeting its media outlets and its financial, banking, and energy sectors, among others, prompting Moscow to retaliate some of the measures. Russia says it will ride out the sanctions. The first Ukraine-Russia meeting in Belarus to reach a ceasefire concluded on Monday, with parties discussing the possibility of holding a second round of talks. Russia says it aims to, quote, denazify and demilitarize Ukraine. It also says NATO must withdraw from areas along or near Russian borders and that the West must formally recognize Moscow's control over the Crimean Peninsula.
The Russians are looking at this and seeing a redeployment of forces up to their borders from the Baltic states all the way to Korea. Bellicose rhetoric coming out of Washington on a daily basis for 5 years now. And they have to know this is, it's time for us to do something. President Putin said last week, you have a knife at our throat, we had to act. And that's the mentality there. It's entirely appropriate given the recent history and the long history of relations between the U.S., Russia, Germany, Poland, and the other players in this.
Crimea has been the point of contention between the West and Moscow since its repatriation to Russia following a referendum in 2014. The U.S. and its allies reject the outcome of the vote and consider the move as illegal. Russian President Vladimir Putin said to ensure its security, his country was left with no choice but to attack Ukraine. The country also says the conflict in its western neighbor roots back years.
This crisis broke out not as a result of the launch of the Russian special military operation in Ukraine, but much earlier, when for 8 years you turned a blind eye to the crimes perpetrated by the Ukrainian nationalists in Donbass. And again, today, you did not mention at all the suffering of the residents of Donbass.
The radical nationalists, according to Russian officials, are funded and aided by the West to create a buffer zone between the two sides. That comes on top of NATO's numerous war games near Russian borders, exercises the Kremlin has slammed as provocative. But those are not the only destructive measures the Western nations, especially the U.S., have taken. Former U.S. President Donald Trump withdrew from many international accords, including key treaties with Russia, and namely the Cold War-era Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, INF, and the Open Skies Treaty. The pacts were signed in the late 80s and early 90s as means to de-escalate tensions, risking to spiral into an all-out nuclear war.
The withdrawal of the U.S. from the INF and the Open Skies Treaty and all of that tend to undermine the kind of confidence that's required right now to avoid a war. That's the first thing that has to be considered. Secondly, is that in the absence of that treaty, of course, we can assume that one of the most violative of those treaty weapons are available or probably deployed and as close to Russia as possible. Russians, certainly, military planners have to assume that. And that, again, puts them on a hair trigger in terms of deciding whether or not to fire a defense against what looks like an incoming attack.
It appears we're getting there again. The president has ordered the military to put the nuclear deterrent forces on high alert, citing what he called unfriendly gestures made by the West. The French foreign minister had earlier warned that the bloc was a nuclear power. Although experts believe the threats about a nuclear confrontation are not to lose any sleep over, the fact of them being mentioned is worrisome to many. Washington says it doesn't want to be a part of a direct conflict with Russia. Why did it pick a fight with the power then, if it wasn't willing to face the music?
North Korea says it launched a missile on Sunday as part of developing a reconnaissance satellite system. The North has not elaborated on the type of rocket used in the test, but authorities in South Korea say it appeared to be a ballistic missile, fired from an area near Pyongyang toward the sea off its east coast. The launch was the eighth this year and the first since the end of January when North Korea fired off a record number of projectiles, including its longest-range ballistic missile since 2017. North Korea has ramped up its missile testing in 2022, announcing plans to bolster its defenses against the United States and evaluating restarting all suspended military activities. North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un had previously stated that his country's weapons development is necessary for self-defense in the face of hostile policies from the United States, including sanctions and joint military drills with South Korea. The North has also vowed to strengthen its nuclear capabilities by building more powerful atomic weapons. The exact size and strength of North Korea's nuclear arsenal are unclear. Some estimates say North Korea could have around 200 nuclear weapons by 2027. Pyongyang is believed to have tested nuclear weapons several times. It has also tested ballistic projectiles capable of reaching the United States. But why does North Korea need this expanding military program?
They learned their lesson, in essence. They learned that the United States can't be trusted, and it is willing to commit just horrific crimes against the Korean people to secure its own interests. And so North Korea doesn't want to end up the same way that Iraq is, the way Palestine is, the way Afghanistan is, because of U.S. involvement, U.S. intervention.
Meanwhile, the U.S. Indo-Pacific Command said it was consulting with its allies, South Korea and Japan, about the latest test. The command said in a statement that the U.S. condemns the launch and calls on North Korea to refrain from further, quote, destabilizing acts. Following a series of North Korean missile launches, the administration of U.S. President Joe Biden has imposed sanctions against Pyongyang. Washington has also called on the Security Council to take action against several North Korean individuals and entities accused of violating resolutions that ban North Korea's projectiles and nuclear weapons development. North Korean citizens continue to suffer because of the sanctions. The World Food Program has estimated that 10.1 million North Koreans are suffering from food shortages. Also, the UN has acknowledged that the US-backed sanctions were at least partly responsible for North Korea's food and medicine shortages.
US sanctions against Korea have been devastating. It has significantly hurt the living standard of the people in North Korea. But with that in mind, they have pushed forward. They have continued on despite the difficult situation that they've been dealt because of U.S. foreign policy. You see that in their scientific advancements. You see that in their rebuilding of the nation after the Korean War. And you're seeing that now as they continue since the Trump administration continue to build newer and improve upon previous models of nuclear warheads.
Despite the sanctions, North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un is pursuing a plan for developing weapons that included hypersonic weapons, spy satellites, solid-fuel intercontinental ballistic missiles, and submarine-launched nuclear projectiles. Kim has intensified expanding his country's military capabilities since his diplomacy with former United States President Donald Trump ended without an agreement in 2019.
Well, I certainly hope that the U.S. is serious about improving relations, but I highly doubt it. I think perhaps the first thing that could be done is the U.S. removing its forces from South Korea, because you have to recognize that in a lot of ways, the Republic of Korea, or South Korea, is just a staging ground for U.S. and NATO forces to be right there on the demilitarized border of North Korea. And so if the U.S. is serious about improving relations, it should, in my opinion, completely withdraw from South Korea all forces.
Trump took unprecedented steps by initiating several rounds of dialogue with the North. However, Washington blew what Pyongyang called a golden opportunity.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
A new Oxfam analysis finds that 99% of humanity is worse off due to COVID-19, while the world's 10 richest men have doubled their fortunes during the pandemic. Stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Jake Johnson, journalist. This article is published under the heading, After 2 years of COVID, report finds pandemic made for deadlier by greed. Here's the story. If a single word can encapsulate why, 2 years into the global COVID-19 pandemic, the virus continues to spread widely and kill thousands of people each day despite the availability of life-saving vaccines. The humanitarian group Oxfam International suggested that the word is greed. In a new report titled Pandemic of Greed, Oxfam offers a grave assessment of the current state of the public health emergency in an effort to bury the notion that the coronavirus is on its way out and normality is on the horizon, a rosy and potentially dangerous sentiment voiced in recent days by the leaders of rich nations and the executives of powerful pharmaceutical companies. While effective vaccines provide hope, their rollout has tipped from a natural desire to protect citizens into nationalism, greed, and self-interest, reads Oxfam's report compiled on behalf of the People's Vaccine Alliance, adding, large numbers of people in low-income countries face the virus unprotected, and millions of people would still be alive today if they had had access to a vaccine. Big pharmaceutical corporations have been given free rein to prioritize profits ahead of vaccine equality. published almost exactly 2 years after the World Health Organization WHO officially declared the novel coronavirus a global pandemic, Oxfam's analysis brings together a slew of data points that, taken together, paint a picture far more dire than the one U.S. President Joe Biden presented during his closely watched State of the Union address recently. Biden said in his speech, "Because of the progress we've made, because of your resilience and the tools we have tonight, I can say we are moving forward safely back to more normal routines." Oxfam's report counters that. In the United States, where vaccination rates are lower than in Europe, the deaths from COVID-19 have remained high, on a par with previous waves of the pandemic. More broadly, the group notes an estimated 99% of humanity are worse off because of COVID-19. 160 million people have been pushed into poverty, and 137 million people have lost their jobs. While the pandemic has had far-reaching and destructive consequences, touching countless lives directly and indirectly across the planet, Oxfam makes clear in its new report that not everyone's livelihood has been harmed by the public health catastrophe. The report notes the richest 10 men doubled their fortunes during the pandemic, and a new billionaire is being created every 26 hours. Of those new billionaires, 40 of them have made their billions profiting from vaccines, treatments, tests, and personal protective equipment. Oxfam emphasizes that the pain inflicted by COVID-19 has been disproportionately concentrated in poor countries, which have been denied sufficient access to vaccines by rich nations and profit-seeking pharmaceutical giants that have hoarded doses and technology. Mazar Sayoum, Global South Convener for the People's Vaccine Alliance, said in a statement recently, "Rich countries and corporations have tied up the global response to COVID-19 for their own benefit, leaving the Global South to bear the brunt of this pandemic. As billions of people are still unable to access vaccines, some have the audacity to claim that the pandemic is over. That is an utter fallacy. Third and fourth doses in rich countries alone cannot erase the ever-rising death toll in lower-income countries." To convey the extent of the pandemic's devastating impact on low-income countries, Oxfam's report observes, "For every life lost in a rich country, another four people have died in a poorer nation. 54% of all deaths caused by COVID-19 have been in low- and lower-middle-income countries, where 10.6 million people have died. 2.7 million people are estimated to have died in high-income countries, 14% of global deaths. People in poorer nations are 1.3 times more likely to die as a result of the pandemic compared to rich countries. Per capita deaths in low- and lower-middle-income countries are 31% higher than in high-income countries. Every minute, four children around the world lose a parent or caregiver as a result of the pandemic. Almost half of these children are in India, where over 2 million children have been affected by orphanhood." Worldwide, Oxfam estimates that 19.6 million people have died as a result of the pandemic. That figure, which includes deaths directly and indirectly caused by COVID-19, is far higher than the official estimate of roughly 6 million deaths from the virus alone. At least 3 million people have died since the highly contagious Omicron variant was detected by South African scientists in November. The only way to prevent the emergence of new mutations and finally end the pandemic, Oxfam argues, is an urgent change in a strategy that includes a suspension of coronavirus-related patent protections, the transfer of vaccine technology to developing countries, and a massive increase in funds for global vaccine manufacturing. According to one recent study, producing and distributing 3 coronavirus vaccine doses to every person in low and lower middle-income countries would prevent over 1 million deaths for the cost of $61 billion, a fraction of the $778 billion U.S. military budget. To date, just 13% of people in low-income countries have received at least one coronavirus vaccine dose. Anna Marriott, Oxfam's health policy manager, in a statement said, "After 2 years, we all want this pandemic to be over. But politicians in rich countries are exploiting that fatigue to ignore the devastating impact of COVID-19 that continues to this day." While incredibly effective vaccines provided hope, rich countries derailed the global vaccine rollout with nationalism, greed, and self-interest. Marriott added, "Suggestions that we are entering a post-COVID era ignore the continuing deaths in primarily lower-income countries that could be prevented by vaccines."
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth. Allahu ya Allah subhanahu.
All those hardships which the prophets bore, all the troubles that the friends of Allah, Awliyaullah, endured, tolerated from the beginning of creation until now, and even after that will keep enduring, were the introduction of this matter that this being which is called man should in reality become human. The purpose of all the books that were revealed to the divine prophets was also this, that if this being remains headstrong or stubborn, then it will become the world's most dangerous being. If he comes under the effect of divine teachings and training, he will be called the best of existence and creation.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to the program Spring of Truth from IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Sayyid Mohsin Naqvi, with the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini. And we started the chapter Islam and Our Deeds. And we are talking about his views about the Islam and our deeds. In one of his speeches, Imam Khomeini said that set Islam as the standard for your actions. What does it mean? It means that Islam is the role model. Islam is the set of rules which tells us how to live the life. And therefore, if we want to weight our actions, it should be according to the Islam. If we want to see whether our actions were right and wrong, the scale of this right and wrong is Islam, because Islam is the truth. Islam is the Quran, and all our actions should be set according to the Islam. The main book which has been said by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, which is related to this religion, Islam, is the Quran. In the Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that هَذَا بَيَانٌ لِلنَّاسِ وَهُدًى وَمَوْعِزَةً لِلْمُتَّقِينَ. This is a clear statement. هَذَا بَيَانٌ لِلنَّاسِ. It is a clear statement. وَهُدًى. And it is a guidance. وَمَوْعِزَةً لِلْمُتَّقِينَ. And the admonition for those who God vary. يا ربنا صل على طه النبي
صل الله عليه
If someone wants to see whether he's performing the right actions or wrong, the standard is Islam, the standard is Quran, because this is the Quran which is the book of guidance. It is Islam, the religion of guidance, which has brought guidance for us. Therefore, our actions should have a scale, and that scale is Islam itself. That scale is Quran itself. Why? Because Quran is the book of guidance. It is not the book of history that talks about history. It is the book of taking lessons out of it. It is the book that teaches us how to live. It is the book that tells us about the family, about this world, about the environment, about our neighbors, about our rights. This is what Quran is all about. Quran is the book of peace. Quran is the book of guidance. And if we are not taking guidance from this book or from the Quran, then obviously we are going towards being astray. Therefore, if we want to save ourselves, we need to set Islam as the standard of our actions, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.